Head On Radio News, I'm Bruce Birch. What did the president know, and when did he know it? A generation ago, that question brought down Richard Nixon's criminal regime. Now the question is being asked again, this time about George Bush. Published reports Thursday show that George W. Bush himself authorized the leak of Valerie Plame's identity as a CIA agent. Former Cheney aide Scooter Libby gave that testimony before the grand jury impaneled by Patrick Fitzgerald. Mr. Bush visited Charlotte, North Carolina today to shore up support for his flagging war. Bush was met with a mostly friendly crowd, though one man, Harry Taylor of Charlotte, expressed his displeasure with Bush's style of leadership.
I don't have a question. What I want to say to you is that I, in my lifetime, I have never felt more ashamed of nor more frightened by my leadership in Washington, including the presidency. And I would hope from time to time that you have the humility and the grace to be ashamed of yourself, inside yourself.
Outside, more than 300 protesters waving signs reading "The World Can't Wait," "Drive Out the Bush Regime," chanted slogans such as "Do Your Job" at the press corps, "Arrest Bush, Not Citizens," and "The Criminal Is Inside." The Senate reached agreement Thursday in the so-called immigration debate. The deal would offer some sort of legalized status to the millions of immigrants already working for poverty wages in the U.S. It also would regulate the future flow of people seeking a better life in the United States. Once finalized, the deal will have to be taken to a conference committee with the House of Representatives, where Republicans want to turn those 11 million workers into criminals. Georgia Representative Cynthia McKinney apologized Thursday for her part in a kerfluffle with the Capitol Police officer. On the floor of the House, Ms. McKinney said, quote, "I am sorry that this misunderstanding happened at all, and I regret its escalation, and I apologize," unquote. Disgraced Republican Congressman Tom DeLay is demanding that McKinney be subjected to an ethics investigation. Speaking of Tom DeLay, his House seat will remain vacant until the November election. Texas Governor Rick Perry said Thursday he won't call a special election to fill DeLay's seat. That means that the people of Sugar Land, Texas, won't have a voice in the House until the general election. Tom DeLay also, the disgraced and resigning former majority leader in the House of Representatives, can, once he retires in a few weeks, draw a $67,000 a year pension from the U.S. government. DeLay, charged with money laundering, resigned from his post Thursday to use his campaign money for legal fees. This is News on the Horn, the Head On Radio Network.
13 million. Who will give me 14? I have 14 million. Do I hear 15? 15, 16. There to you, sir.
Political power doesn't come cheap in America.
Sold for $22 million of other rollback in air quality regulations.
George Bush understands that money equals power. His campaign spent nearly $50 million this March alone. That's a record.
Next on the block, the First Amendment. Who will give me 1 million?
Just because it's a democracy doesn't mean it's free. How much is your vote worth?
Easily paid for by BillionairesForBush.com.
Former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani took the stand Thursday in the death penalty trial of Zacharias Moussaoui. Giuliani, who had an affair with a woman, not his wife, while he was mayor of New York and lied about it, told the jury that September the 11th, 2001, quote, was battle, unquote. Giuliani testified in hopes of getting to see Moussaoui killed for his nominal participation in the events of that day. A report by the Center for Media and Democracy entitled "Fake TV News, Widespread and Undisclosed" was released today. The report documents 77 television stations that have aired so-called news content that was actually sponsored content. Corporate firms are pre-producing content called VNRs, or video news releases, prepackaged segments that many television stations are airing unedited during their news programming, and not identifying them as sponsored content. In Ohio, three Cuyahoga County elections officials were charged with misdemeanor and felony counts of failing to follow the state elections law. These indictments are related to the 2004 presidential election. Apparently, these officials, who are still actively working for the Cuyahoga County Elections Department, illegally altered a test recount to keep from having to do a full recount of ballots in that county. Officials in Ohio say more indictments are likely. Donald Rumsfeld and Condoleezza Rice are at odds over statements she made last week. Rice said that the U.S. made, quote, thousands of tactical errors, unquote, in the handling of Bush's war on Iraq. Rumsfeld says this is false, that the enemy has a brain and adjusts to tactical decisions. FCC Chairman Kevin Martin today suggested that even more centralization of media ownership was on the horizon, sharply criticizing the rule disallowing newspaper publishers from owning television stations in that same market. Martin even went so far as to suggest to the assembled publishers that they work to convince the public of the necessity of this rule change. The town of Bridgeville in Northern California is now up for sale again on eBay. The owner, Bill Krall, is hoping to turn what he bought for $700,000 into a cool $1 million profit. Krall said he has had offers from as far away as China and Germany, but no bids have been registered on the eBay site. For the Head On Radio Network, I'm Bruce Birch.
Now, Head On with Bob Kincaid. Head On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, good evening. All righty then. Let's crank it up for a Thursday night. What do you say? All right, then. Well, I'm going to ask the same question that I seem to ask every time another bit of damning information comes out about Dear Leader. And that question is, now can we impeach him? Now? This time? You know, like the soundbite that you heard in the news there from our news anchor, Bruce Birch. The gentleman who asked him in Charlotte today, at some point in time, I hope you have the humility to be ashamed of yourself. But that, as the old legal maxim goes, that assumes facts, not in evidence. Because George Bush has no shame. All right? Yeah. We understand that, don't we? If you have shame, if you have a conscience, it is impossible to order the slaughter of 100,000 women and children who have no fight with you. If you have a conscience, it is impossible to go and get yourself gifted with a shiny new guitar while Katrina floods New Orleans and a town dies before America's very eyes. So we're clear on that, right? The man has no conscience. He is a killer. Richard Nixon ordered the cover-up after he found out about the break-in that they didn't tell him about in the first place. I loathe Richard Nixon. I know for a fact that if there is a hell, he is on a spit in it, being twisted slowly over the flames and broiling for all eternity. But Richard Nixon covered up a crime. George W. Bush committed one. Or two, or three, or a dozen. When does America stand up and say, get out of our house? When does it happen? What's the coverage like on TV? I'm not up on what's going on. I walked through the living room long enough to see that Wolf Blitzer wasn't exactly on fire with this story. He was talking to Bob Schieffer about Katie Couric. Bringing you the world, this is CNN. Bug spray. Please, can we get a couple of million people in Lafayette Park and tell this bastard to get out of our house? I don't mean to get worked up so early. And yeah, I know. They're already denying it. No, but this is I know they're denying it. They're saying, well, George Bush didn't have anything to do with that. He was in church with his mama. But what do you expect him to do? To finally come out and confess? They have to deny this. They have to deny it because it's because of what all is already on the record. I've got what's on the record here. Let me see if I can find this real quick. Nah, that's the wrong file. Here we go. Yeah, here it is. Check this out. This is 2003, okay? It'll load in a second. I'm sorry. There we go.
If there's a leak out of my administration, I want to know who it is. If the person has violated law, the person will be taken care of.
These no-good SOBs have ordered grand jury investigations into who leaked the information about George Bush's domestic spying program, where they listen in on your phone calls with your sainted auntie. Because, you see, when they capture one, they capture them all. All this hogwash about, well, it's very selective. We're talking about supercomputers that just gather every last piece of information that runs across phone lines or bounces off a satellite or off of a cell tower in the entire United States, and they do it every day. Because we have a lawless madman at the helm of government. I don't know, maybe I should have opened with a joke or something. Nah, this is another one of those situations where it's not funny. Because, you see, it's not just George Bush. Oh, you know, let's hear this again, because you know what? This is another case of Monica at the rope line.
If there's a leak out of my administration, I want to know who it is. If the person has violated law, the person will be taken care of.
This is Monica Gate all over again. And the Statue of Liberty is wearing the stained blue dress. Parse those words.
If there's a leak out of my administration, I want to know who it is. If the person has violated law, the person will be taken care of.
Don't you see, when he means to, he speaks as seriously as a heart attack. That person will be taken care of. Not that person will be punished. Not that person will be prosecuted. Not the language that he used for Osama bin Laden about, he'll be brought to justice. And we've got an old saying in Texas, wanted, dead or alive. He'll be taken care of. Come on over here, son. Why would he use language like that? You know why he uses language like that. He uses language like that because he's the criminal. And all his life he has shirked his responsibilities. All his roads and days he has passed on taking any responsibility for his own actions. And every time he has screwed up, he's been say it with me, taken care of. You understand that if we were paying attention, we would have seen some of those words for what they were. We would have heard the autobiographical quality of what he said. Are you surprised by this news today? I'm not surprised. I've known this all along. And I know how it's going to be handled, too. Let's take a break. And when we come back, maybe we'll talk about that. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Hi, everybody. This is Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man's thinking man. And if you're sick and tired of the same crap you hear on corporate radio, then I want to invite you to join me for the premiere of the Cup of Joe radio show, Saturday, April 8th, 2006, from 8 to 10 p.m. It's the wave of the future, the voice of the resistance, the truth that will set you free. So join me this Saturday from 8 to 10 p.m. on the Head On Radio Network.
Lottie in the chat room has fixed himself some stuffed pork chops with apple raisin walnut chuck.
You, me, Grace, Rama.
Mango chutney.
Hey, speaking of that,
it's all you need.
Mustard seed?
Mustard seed, yeah. That article.
It's not the
there.
Same as mustard gas.
Well, it's pretty close. Mustard gas.
Join
mustard
Grace gas. And Rama, homebodies, Sunday evenings, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network. It's food for thought.
A man who just loves conservatives, baked, broiled, or fried. Here's Bob Kincaid.
Or, as would appear to be the case with George W. Bush, simmering slowly in his own juices.
If there's a leak out of my administration, I want to know who it is. If the person has violated law, the person will be taken care of.
Oh, you're damn right they're going to be taken care of. Coddled and swaddled and held in the loving arms of the Republican Party, who still sends out press releases about Hillary Clinton, who still has members who are running around screaming that they're certain that she killed Vince Foster, who like to talk about, you know, that airport at Manor, Arkansas, where they... Oh, God. Now, how's this going to break out? How is this... how is his bacon going to get saved? I already know. Now, right now, you've got the initial flurry of, no, he didn't! Did not. You know, it's the argument. It's the sketch from Monty Python. Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were here for abuse. No, I want arguments. Two doors down. Now you're simply gainsaying me. Am not R2. That's this phase of the game. What's next? I know what's next. I know because I've heard their. I've read their thinking. I've read what passes for theory on their parts. You know it too. We talked a week ago about the signing statement for the anti-torture bill and the signing statement for on the Patriot Act that requires certain disclosure to Congress of the FBI's activities in monitoring and spying on American citizens who mean no harm and only love their countries. We remember that signing statement, don't you? Of course, of course, of course. What did he say? Based upon my powers as the... Come on. It's right there. Based upon my powers as the unitary executive, I will ignore this law if need be. There it was in the Scalia, dirtbag that's on the Supreme Court now. There it was. All those questions about the unitary executive. Oh, yes. That dear, sweet, never ever intended by the framers of the Constitution, unitary executive. And that's what we're going to get this time through, too. We didn't leak. George Bush didn't tell them they could leak Valerie Plame's name. That didn't happen. No, of course, it did. He told Cheney and Scooter Libby they could leak the information to Judith Miller and Bob Woodward. Yeah, he did that. He did that because as the president, he has the power to declassify any information he wants to because, Jesus, help us here, please. We're going to prison. He did it because he's the unitary executive. Right? That's where it goes. That's how it happens. And then it works its way up the chain of law, up through the court system. Some of this will happen via the trial of Irving Lewis Scooter Libby. You remember Scooter, the guy who wrote the novel about the 9 and 10 year old prostitutes being put in a cage to have sex with a bear in Japan. You remember Scooter, don't you? Sure. And it'll go up through the court system. And Libby's defense will have something to do with the fact that that he didn't do anything wrong because he was authorized by the president to do so. And that authorization from the president was a function of the president's unitary executive powers. And it'll go from the trial court up to the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. And from the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, it will go to the United States Supreme Court. And there, at the United States Supreme Court, sits a man named Sammy Alito, who is willing to believe 3 impossible things before breakfast every day. And one of those impossible things will be the unitary executive. Let's see, who will rule in favor of George Bush this time? Last time, in 2000, it was Scalia, Rehnquist, what's her name? Already forgotten her. Sandra Day O'Connor. Scalia, Rehnquist, O'Connor, Thomas, and Kennedy. So this time through, the unitary executive will be created out of whole cloth in the Constitution by Scalia and Roberts and Alito and Thomas and Kennedy. And there you will have it. The monarchical presidency. But we can't call it a monarchy, and we can't call him Caesar. So we'll call him something that sounds scientific and high-blown and philosophical. We'll call him unitary. You know, I somewhere back in my theological studies and training and teaching and stuff, isn't there a commentary by one of those old dudes from the church back when they were cooking up the Trinity? That the Trinity was a unity? That the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit were a unit? That the Trinity was in fact unitary? There you go. There was a cult in ancient Rome that required people to worship divine Caesar. And what you have here is a move on the part of the Republican Party to set up George W. Bush as something nigh unto divine, untouchable by the laws that are written by nothing but mere mortals. Are you ready for this? Do you understand? Of course you do. This is coming. This is here. This is now, sunshine. George Bush is setting himself up as dictator of us all. And it will come through a harmless sounding word like unitary executive. And now I remind you, who put Scalito, who put Sammy Bad Breath on the bench? Who did it? We knew all the Republicans would side with him, but even so, they didn't have enough to get him past a filibuster. Who do we have to thank for the creation of the near godlike president who can override acts of Congress with the mere stroke of a pen? Who can we thank? Who can we send a note of thanks to, written on a piece of personal stationery with the rings from where our coffee cup was sitting on it, and maybe a grease stain or two from the donut we were eating? Who gets letters like that? To whom would you send a handwritten letter filled with your personal sentiments and your coffee stains and your donut grease spots, thanking him for helping to create an American monarchy? To whom would you send such a letter? I know to whom mine is going. My letter of thanks for the destruction of this republic is going to Senator Robert Byrd, who told us all how he believed that Alito was an honorable man. We will see how far that honor extends, and we will see it in this court case. Thank you, Bob. Thank you so, so very much for helping us to get the unitary executive. The unitary executive who can put one, not one, but dozens, perhaps hundreds of human beings' lives in mortal danger by divulging the identity of a secret agent for nothing more than a political vendetta. You see, there's a lot of similarities between Bush and the Nixon administration, because the break-in at Democratic Party headquarters was a political vendetta. Sure it was. Do you remember the enemies list? Of course. And when Joseph Wilson dared to declare that George Bush had lied us into a war that has cost us the lives of more than 2,300 fine, upstanding young men and women who, with their last dying breath, didn't say, God bless America, but simply called out as their blood flowed out onto the ground for their mama. When Joseph Wilson pointed out those lies, George Bush's first thought was payback. Not the good of the nation, just simply payback. Hateful vendetta. Bloody-handed retribution. And now we are in a position to watch him get away with it. I weep. I weep for this once great republic. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Kentucky. That's the place where I traced my bloodline. And it's there I read on a hillside gravestone, you'll never leave Harlan alive.
Head on.
On the last Fourth Estate, we heard from Robert Fisk.
What has now become a habit of compromising on the semantics of reporting in order to avoid criticism. You know, if you call a Jewish settlement or neighborhood a colony, you'll be criticized and called potentially anti-Semitic.
And a little bit of activist history and the Red Scare.
On the line with us right now, we have Kate Fossil, biographer of Anne Braden.
You know, I got interested in Anne's life because of her being a white Southern voice against racism. And
leave it to our listeners to ring up and keep it light.
I don't either. And, you know, Bruce is concerned about the remote control for his DVD player. I mean, I'm thinking about getting rid of the remote control on my blow-up doll. I mean, you know.
What's his name?
I never kiss a tell.
FourthEstateRadio.com.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to.
A group of U.S. businessmen in the UAE said they will invite the Oprah Winfrey Show and other talk shows to the Gulf to change American public opinion, which has helped block Dubai's takeover of six U.S. ports. He's saying that they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States and explain why the UAE is important. If you want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, they need to send something, not Oprah. I mean, how many average guys do you know watch Oprah? I don't. If they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, as much as I hate to say it, they need to send Jerry Springer and the Jerry Springer Show over there with the bald guy. You know, maybe they can do a UAE version of My Grandmother Is Also My Lover or something like that. Oh, that's just a...
Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
Like you.
conservatives. We don't need no stinking conservatives. Here's Bob Kincaid.
So I'm looking around at some of the news sites trying to find the non-denial denials. Remember that Watergate expression coined by Woodward and Bernstein, Stone, back when Bob Woodward was still a legitimate journalist and not a shameless recipient of leaked information about secret agents, not a participant in treason. They coined that because they'd come out with these accusations against the Nixon administration, and the Nixon administration would come out and purport to be denying everything they said, but in the course of the denial, somehow wouldn't quite manage to. And so it became the non-denial denial. I'm looking on the CNN website, for instance, and I'm not seeing a whole bunch of information on the denial, but I do have to point out that somebody at CNN needs to go back to journalism school or at least maybe take an English class. Yes, yes, yes. I want to share this headline with you. A little bit of levity in the midst of all of this very, very, very serious business that's going to get absolutely no airplay from the bought-off media. Headline on the CNN website. Catch it there while you can get, you know, because we all love a good chuckle. Headline, woman thrown from speeding truck comatose. Now, you tell me what that means, pretty please. Woman thrown from speeding truck comatose. Was the truck comatose? Was the woman thrown from the... Was she comatose when she was thrown from the truck? Oh, my God, throw me down the stairs, my hat. Throw mama from the train a kiss. Woman thrown from speeding truck comatose. Ah, you know, you can't pay for that kind of stuff. Expert liquor tipple stops plants tipping. Huh? Okay, so let's see what CNN's got to say about this.
Waiting.
There it is. Here's how it reads from the CNN from CNN's own writers, not AP or anything. Vice President Dick Cheney's former top aide testified that President Bush authorized the release of parts of a classified report on Iraq to rebut criticism of the case for the 2003 invasion federal prosecutors disclosed in documents released Thursday. The information did not name CIA agent Valerie Plame, whose 2003 exposure triggered an investigation that led to indictment of I. Lewis Scooter Libby. So that is how they're going to try to get around it at first. But the president can leak anything he wants to, and when the president doesn't, it's like not a leak, you know? Like, you know, because he's like, you know, the executive, like, who's unitary, you know? Oh, that's good. Libby's charged with perjury, obstruction of justice, and lying to FBI agents investigating Plame's exposure. Her outing came just days after her husband, former Ambassador Joseph Wilson, had publicly questioned Bush, yada, yada, yada. And then there's more talk about Wilson's account, and Libby undertook vigorous efforts to rebut this attack in the following week. Prosecutors stated as part of that effort, he told a grand jury, Cheney told him that Bush had authorized the release of portions of the National Intelligence Estimate on Iraq. Okay, so Libby said that the NIE, National Intelligence Estimate, was, quote, pretty definitive against what Ambassador Wilson had said, and that the vice president thought that it was very important for the key judgments of the NIE to come out. As President Bush, here comes the cover. As President, Bush has the authority to release any classified document, but Democrats quickly jumped on the information in Fitzgerald's pleading, accusing Bush of using that authority for political purposes. Dear God. So you understand now. We know. We know where Valerie Plame's name came from. Now George Bush, he didn't know what Valerie Plame's name was. What he said was, I want you to get back at that SOB Wilson. And I don't care how you do it. You know, it's the sort of thing to point toward. Henry II. With regard to Archbishop of Canterbury Thomas à Becket, Henry II is said to have merely wondered aloud, "Will no one rid me of this meddlesome priest?" And Henry's barons went over, found Thomas à Becket praying in the cathedral there at Canterbury, and skewered him like a shish kebab. Now, Henry didn't tell them to do that. He just asked a rhetorical question. Will no one rid me of this meddlesome priest? And they went and killed Thomas à Becket. Now, foolish sense that George Bush could ever string together a sentence as complex as, will no one rid me of this meddlesome priest? No, knowing what we do now about the way Bush behaves in the Oval Office, it was probably something more on the lines of, I wish somebody'd get that SOB Wilson off my back. And so, people know things, and Scooter Libby knew things, and names were named, but it was all done because George W. Bush, by God, wanted it done. The chickens are home to roost. Right? I should hope so. Now, Senator Chuck Schumer, who loves the camera, came running out and said that Bush and Cheney need to clear the air. Now, here's a real tough fighting Democrat for you. At the very least, President Bush and Vice President Cheney should fully inform the American people of any role in allowing classified information to be leaked. Did they believe they had the right to do this? And if so, in what circumstances? Or is this just something that may have been done in order to accommodate the president's momentary political needs? Oh, Jesus. Is there not one Democrat who will stand up and say, when is this crook going to be called to account? Well, oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, there was one. Russ Feingold tried it last Friday. Couldn't get any Democrats to come to the hearing! That's where we are. And he laid it out. Point by point by point. You know, and there was that pitiful, pitiful moron, Jeff Sessions, saying, we authorized him to spy on the American people when we told him he could make war on Afghanistan. Jiminy Christmas. What do you do with people like that? If they're criminally insane, you put them away somewhere where they can't do themselves or anyone else any harm. If they are, however, just criminals, you punish them in the most harsh, draconian means that are available to you. We are talking here about the one crime that is defined within the four corners of the Constitution of the United States of America. Murder, not defined. Burglary, not mentioned. Horse thieving, ain't there. There is one crime mentioned within the four corners of the Constitution of the United States, and that crime is treason. And George Bush and Dick Cheney and Scooter Libby and Scotty McClellan, don't forget Scotty, they've all committed it. Now, I mentioned Scotty to you because you might find this you might find this interesting as well. It wasn't George Bush sitting there saying, if there's a leaker, we'll find him and take care of him and get him a blankie and some footy pajamas. No, it was McClellan, too. Listen to this.
They're good individuals. They're important members of our White House team. And that's why I spoke with them, so that I could come back to you and say that they were not involved. I had no doubt of that in the beginning, but I like to check my information to make sure it's accurate before I report back to you, and that's exactly what I did.
And then you came back and you told a big old honking lie, didn't you, Scott? Of course, you know, it's all these things do sort of interlock together. If only, you know, it's a jigsaw puzzle, and the trick with a jigsaw puzzle is to find the pieces that go together, and eventually you get the whole picture. Oh, look, it's a pony. Oh, look, it's treason. So that's what, you know, that's what you have here, if you can put the pieces together. What was the news over the weekend that was trickling out? Said that we might see the resignation this week of Jon Snow at the Treasury, and who? Oh, wait a minute. I got it. I know.
They're good individuals.
Yeah, Scotty.
They're important members of our White House team, and that's why I spoke with them, so that I could come back to you and say,
and lie like a rug,
they were not involved. I had no doubt of that in the beginning, but I like to check my information to make sure it's accurate before I report back to you, and that's exactly what I did.
Now, I don't want Scotty to go to prison forever. What, maybe 10 years in Club Fed? But George Bush and Dick Cheney, they need to go to a real prison for a real long time. This is Head On. I'm Bob. Screaming, deceiving, and bleeding you. And you still won't hear me.
Head On with Bob Kincaid.
What would happen if you didn't follow the established path? If you did the unexpected? Would you feel scared? Proud? Relieved? Could you explain that helping the people of Peru improve their own community would also have an effect on your own? Or assisting an entrepreneur in Ukraine to launch her small business? Or creating a support group in Malawi for children orphaned by AIDS? What if you established your own path? One that others might follow? Would you rather make your own way? Or spend your life saying, what if? Life is calling. How far will you go? Peace Corps. To find out more, call 1-800-424-8580. I go to peacecorps.gov.
Parents, did you know that high school dropouts make 42% less than graduates? Someone will have to make up that difference, and chances are, that will be you. That means paying 42% of their groceries.
Ooh, more candy.
42% of their dentist bills.
No more candy.
Even 42% of their therapy sessions.
It's all my dad's fault.
Save your money. Encourage your kids to stay in school. For help and advice, call 877-FORA-KID. A message from the U.S. Army and the Ad Council.
One of the many things people expect schools to do these days is inspire students to be creative. Hello, I'm Richard Thompson. Educators and psychologists agree. They say that helping young minds tap their creativity is just as important as mastering math and English skills. And of course, all parents love to experience the joy of seeing and hearing something their child has created. Well, one of the best places creativity is actively encouraged is in music class. Kids working out a phrase in a choir part, learning technical stuff like fingerings on an instrument, or even composing and arranging music on computers. Music classrooms are bursting with creative energy, just waiting to be explored by young minds. Don't let it go to waste. Please support your school music program.
A PSA brought to you by MENC, the National Association for Music Education, Gibson Guitar, Baldwin Piano, and this station. Music, part of a sound education.
This is for
Daddy. I took my love and I took it down. I climbed a mountain and I turned around. And I saw my reflection in the snow.
A liberal light in the conservative darkness. Here's Bob Kincaid.
About 10 minutes before the hour here on Head On for a Thursday night. Who's up for an impeachment? I'll bring the popcorn. Or maybe it's just a weenie roast. I don't know. Tell you what. Let's go to the phones. Bob is joining us from North Dakota. Hey, Bob, you're head on. Hey, Bob. Bob, you got to turn your radio down, buddy.
About 10 minutes before the hour here on head on.
Okay, honey, put Bob back on. You there, Bob? I don't like listening to me do the show 30 seconds ago, dear. Would you please put it back on hold?
I don't know.
Thank you. Okay, just a general note. When you call the program, turn your speakers down, please, because that just makes things really hinky otherwise. No, honey. Just be ready, because it's like the auditory equivalent of a room full of mirrors. Because frankly, well, let me give you an example. I'm watching my clock right now. It is 7:51 right now. Now, by the time that gets to you, it's going to be halfway through 7:51. So it doesn't work so well. If you're listening, listen on hold on the phone, please. We do appreciate your considerations. Okay, so that's just a little technical note. I understand that, dear. But at any rate, we were talking about a song earlier, Agnes and I. Can you find that tune? And we play it. So the phone's ringing again. Let's see who this is. Okay, let's try Bob again. Hey, Bob, you're head on.
Sorry about that. I was kind of sleeping in a chair or something. I don't know.
Well, that happens.
Hey, I just missed the cue. I
put you to sleep? This is not a good sign, Bob.
Well, no, you didn't put me to sleep. I had to come on the air, and I didn't want to come on. I really didn't. But things are popping.
Yeah, they are.
Yeah. And why are they popping?
I don't know.
Because we just keep, it's kind of like I sent an email today, and I said, when they give you these, edicts, these things you hear on the air that are just kind of talking points.
Yeah.
Okay? Just don't listen to the talking point. Just, take what you know to be a fact, okay, and slam it back into their face. I mean, I'm not talking about hitting them or nothing like that, but just say, okay.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. What we're gonna see is a series of non-denial denials. All along, the White House has said, we don't comment on pending investigations.
No,
well, now the pending investigation indicates that George Bush is a crook. How are they going to deal with it?
How do you deal with a liar?
By lying.
No.
No, yeah, Bob,
no.
Yes. I mean,
no,
a rhetorical question.
No, you don't lie to
yeah, that's
a liar.
How, that is how they deal with their liars. They
well,
lie, they tell
they
more lies,
with,
Bob.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
I just said, when they lie to you,
you know
them the fact.
Yeah, and okay? you know them for what they are. They're liars. I expect them to lie to me.
Right. Of course. And so
that makes getting the truth a heck of a lot more simple.
I've listened to your program since I first heard of Bob Kincaid.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yeah.
And I've downloaded every episode, and I've burned them on a disc, and I've given them to people
in the hundreds,
okay?
That's great. I appreciate that.
No. It's because you've never lied to me.
I try not to.
You know, you can't. No. You've never lied. And when you've made an error, you've always corrected yourself.
Well,
you've always come back with the truth. Absolutely the truth. Nothing but the truth. So help you, whatever. I've given up on religion. I really have, because I'm sick to death of people dragging down a deity and throwing it at my face, okay?
Okay, but this isn't a religious discussion. I mean,
no, I know it's not. But that's what they use. Every one of them use their deity, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Everyone, it doesn't matter whether they are jihadists or they are George W. Bush and company. They always throw that, you know, that religion thing out. So, okay, if they throw it out into your face, then say, okay, prove it. I'm tired of this. I really am. The boys and the girls in the chat room have been egging me on, and I didn't want to come on.
No. Okay, Bob, but we're not. The chat room is the chat room. This is the program.
I know.
Okay, we're not necessarily talking about what's going on in there.
Okay, well, it's fun in there.
It is fun. It's a great opportunity. Head on radionetwork.com, and registration's easy, and there's a good gang of people in there.
You know what's wonderful about that?
What?
Is that people connect.
Yeah, from all over the world. That's what blows me away.
Do that, Bob. We need to stop thinking about our little geographical area we're in and realize that we are human beings on one simple little piece of speck of dust in the universe. Because it's not very big. It's tiny compared to the outer planets that the non-scientific people would tell us, well, gee, that red gas, that huge planet out there you call Jupiter, it doesn't exist because we said it doesn't exist. But you know it's there, don't you? Don't you know that? You know, you got to know that we're in a solar system. Yeah?
Yeah, sure. We're in a galaxy, in a universe.
It's just a speck of dust in a, I don't know, we keep going round and round and keep coming.
Yeah, the best perspective on that, Bob, is a website, and all I can suggest in terms of searching for it is to Google pale blue dot, and you'll get all the perspective
pale
that you can stand.
Pale blue dot.
Pale blue dot. But right now, Bob, we've got to go because we got the news coming up.
Well, that's wonderful, but hey, guys, I haven't left you, and I'm not ever going to.
Well, good.
Until they put my in the ground.
In the dirt. That's right. I appreciate
it,
Bob.
I'll love you till you die, boy.
And all right. Take care, Bob. We got to roll. Got to hit the break.
Okay. Bye.
Take care now. Bye. And we will be back with more of your phone calls. They're mighty welcome. 877, the number 4, head on. 877-443-2366. Oh, we got to talk about this song. This is one of my favorite songs. Did you know this song can get you arrested? Yeah. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
The ice is coming, the sun's zooming in. tasted the wheat tastes good.
Head On Radio News, I'm Bruce Birch. What did the president know, and when did he know it? A generation ago, that question brought down Richard Nixon's criminal regime. Now the question is being asked again, this time about George Bush. Published reports Thursday show that George W. Bush himself authorized the leak of Valerie Plame's identity as a CIA agent. Former Cheney aide Scooter Libby gave that testimony before the grand jury impaneled by Patrick Fitzgerald. Mr. Bush visited Charlotte, North Carolina today to shore up support for his flagging war. Bush was met with a mostly friendly crowd, though one man, Harry Taylor of Charlotte, expressed his displeasure with Bush's style of leadership.
I don't have a question. What I want to say to you is that I, in my lifetime, I have never felt more ashamed of nor more frightened by my leadership in Washington, including the presidency. And I would hope from time to time that you have the humility and the grace to be ashamed of yourself, inside yourself.
Outside, more than 300 protesters waving signs reading "The World Can't Wait, Drive Out the Bush Regime" chanted slogans such as "Do Your Job" at the press corps, "Arrest Bush, Not Citizens," and "The Criminal Is Inside." The Senate reached agreement Thursday in the so-called immigration debate. The deal would offer some sort of legalized status to the millions of immigrants already working for poverty wages in the U.S. It also would regulate the future flow of people seeking a better life in the United States. Once finalized, the deal will have to be taken to a conference committee with the House of Representatives, where Republicans want to turn those 11 million workers into criminals. Georgia Representative Cynthia McKinney apologized Thursday for her part in a kerfluffle with the Capitol Police officer. On the floor of the House, Ms. McKinney said, quote, "I am sorry that this misunderstanding happened at all, and I regret its escalation, and I apologize," unquote. Disgraced Republican Congressman Tom DeLay is demanding that McKinney be subjected to an ethics investigation. Speaking of Tom DeLay, his House seat will remain vacant until the November election. Texas Governor Rick Perry said Thursday he won't call a special election to fill DeLay's seat. That means that the people of Sugar Land, Texas, won't have a voice in the House until the general election. Tom DeLay also, the disgraced and resigning former majority leader in the House of Representatives, can, once he retires in a few weeks, draw a $67,000 a year pension from the U.S. government. DeLay, charged with money laundering, resigned from his post Thursday to use his campaign money for legal fees. This is News on the Horn, the Head On Radio Network.
13 million, who will give me 14? I have 14 million, do I hear 15? 15, 16, there to you, sir.
Political power doesn't come cheap in America.
Sold for $22 million, another rollback in air quality regulations.
George Bush understands that money equals power. His campaign spent nearly $50 million this March alone. That's a record.
Next on the block, the First Amendment. Who will give me 1 million?
Just because it's a democracy doesn't mean it's free. How much is your vote worth?
Easily paid for by BillionairesForBush.com.
Former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani took the stand Thursday in the death penalty trial of Zacharias Moussaoui. Giuliani, who had an affair with a woman, not his wife, while he was mayor of New York and lied about it, told the jury that September the 11th, 2001, quote, was battle, unquote. Giuliani testified in hopes of getting to see Moussaoui killed for his nominal participation in the events of that day. A report by the Center for Media and Democracy entitled "Fake TV News, Widespread and Undisclosed" was released today. The report documents 77 television stations that have aired so-called news content that was actually sponsored content. Corporate firms are pre-producing content called VNRs, or video news releases, prepackaged segments that many television stations are airing unedited during their news programming, and not identifying them as sponsored content. In Ohio, three Cuyahoga County elections officials were charged with misdemeanor and felony counts of failing to follow the state elections law. These indictments are related to the 2004 presidential election. Apparently, these officials, who are still actively working for the Cuyahoga County Elections Department, illegally altered a test recount to keep from having to do a full recount of ballots in that county. Officials in Ohio say more indictments are likely. Donald Rumsfeld, and Condoleezza Rice are at odds over statements she made last week. Rice said that the U.S. made, quote, thousands of tactical errors, unquote, in the handling of Bush's war on Iraq. Rumsfeld says this is false, that the enemy has a brain and adjusts to tactical decisions. FCC Chairman Kevin Martin today suggested that even more centralization of media ownership was on the horizon, sharply criticizing the rule disallowing newspaper publishers from owning television stations in that same market. Martin even went so far as to suggest to the assembled publishers that they work to convince the public of the necessity of this rule change. The town of Bridgeville in Northern California is now up for sale again on eBay. The owner, Bill Krall, is hoping to turn what he bought for $700,000 into a cool $1 million profit. Krall said he has had offers from as far away as China and Germany, but no bids have been registered on the eBay site. For the Head On Radio Network, I'm Bruce Birch.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're Head On with Bob Kincaid.
Stir up another hour of fun in the sandbox. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the nightly little fracas we call Head On. And Andy is with us from the UK, from Wales more specifically. Hey, Andy, you're Head On.
Hey, man, how's it going?
Doing well.
Very good. No, I had to call in, just going to make it a brief one because it cost a fortune.
Sorry about the wait.
No, that's cool, man. You know, you got to hit the brakes and all that. all right, minor correction. Scooter Libby is a kind of pots-making surfer, dude. You've got to work on your impression, man. Sorry.
Sorry.
Well, you know, dude, like, it's just, you've got to be a lot more like, oh dude. Yeah, there you go. On the other point, I think, actually, Bush is guilty of the two things, because I'm not 100% on the Constitution, but I'm sure there's two things that count as an actual high crime, and that's treason, which we've just found out he's guilty of, for sure, mm-hmm. and breaking treaties, which he's already done.
Yeah.
So...
Because once it...
Can I just use
go ahead.
The show as a kind of medium to talk to Agent Fred, or whoever it is, Agent Anne, like, Agent, he hasn't got your back. He'll have you as soon as he needs to, just like he had Valerie Plame and all of those hundreds of people that were connected to her, most of whom are now face down in some river somewhere or, you know, wearing concrete overcoats somewhere. He'll have you just as quickly if he needs to. So just remember that before you come for us. let's face it, he'll hang anyone out to dry. Yeah, Dick Cheney, think you're safe? Afraid not, you know? Carl Rove, think you're safe? Frank Luntz? Just because you invented Newspeak for the Bush regime doesn't mean you're going to survive this. Do you know what I mean?
I do know what you mean. And I mean, there's some proof in that. Look at the people they've surrounded themselves with. What was it, night before last, after the show was going off the air, we find out that the deputy press secretary for Homeland Security has been busted for trying to seduce what he thought was a 14-year-old girl on the Internet. Telling her to go get yourself a video cam. I want to see you naked. And then what? Yesterday it turns out that another dude was caught flashing, exposing himself. And
surprise me, they're all freaks.
Yeah, they are. And what?
Well, remember what the first thing they did with the FBI like recently was new person in charge of the FBI. Let's go after the porn industry. Only people who are sexually repressed do that.
That's true.
There you go. They're a bunch of freaks. They really are, like, not compass mentis. They're insane, a lot of them.
They're not home.
No, well, they're not. They've been brought up amongst, like, absolute power, haven't they? You know, they don't understand the concept of, like, well, first of all, enough, or limits, or any of those crazy things that we consider, like, you know, human beings to kind of, I don't know, you know, what do you need for your family? Enough food, shelter, power, entertainment, but that doesn't have to be a TV. You
know? We're easily entertained. We have books.
Well, yeah, I mean, George Bush has probably not picked up a book since he was forced to in college, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, the guy, what, he has a load of clippings delivered to him from the headlines of the newspaper, so he gets to read the headlines. So you know what? That says to all those editors out there, the most important person in my paper office is the headline writer. And I don't know what your headline writers are like over there, but ours like to manage to get three words of one syllable each in.
Bush, like God.
Yeah. Yeah.
Bush, Jesus friend.
Yeah, I mean, I mean, fair play to the people who write the headlines for The Sun over here. Those guys, like, manage to get a pun in every day on something, you know? Like a bad pun, but they get a pun in. But, I mean, even that would probably go over Bush's head. You know, the sort of, like, lowest tabloid humor that you can get would probably go straight above him. He'd probably take it all as gospel.
Well, exactly. I mean, it's just like what we've got here, like I mentioned a little bit ago with this CNN thing. What was it? Woman thrown from speeding truck comatose. You know, you can't pay for that kind of stuff, Andy.
Yeah.
I mean, at least you've got headline writers in the UK who are like into puns.
Well, yeah, that's true. Yeah, well, people wouldn't buy the paper if they didn't do that. Although maybe the girl on page three does something.
I like the page three girl.
Well, you know, hey, it's slightly classier than your average kind of pornography, but then. And they normally have a slightly humorous pun on there as well. So, these people wind me up. I mean, the guy's admitted, basically, he's been openly stated as treasonous, and because they didn't come out and deny it straight away, didn't they send Scotty out to do a little snivelling excuse thing or something?
Well, that's because if they send, they got to be careful what they send Scotty out to do, because at this point what Scotty is doing is commonly referred to, I don't know about your country, but in mine, a felony.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, he'd definitely be endangering himself on the right to silence front, sure, over here. Do you know what I mean? We don't like to say that. I mean, we've got very nebulous freedom of speech, and you know, you can kind of incriminate yourself without incriminating yourself fully and stuff, as long as you don't officially incriminate yourself and stuff. So he'd probably be walking a very tight rope over here. But, yeah, I mean, he's obviously... I mean, I love the way he passes things as well. It's like that... you know, I went back to check that my information was correct, because I like to check that my information is correct before coming back and talking to you guys. Now, that doesn't say at any point I'm going to give you guys the correct information.
No, he didn't, did he? No, not at all.
They never call him on it, because they're a bunch of cowards. And, of course, he never talks to Helen Thomas, because she calls him on it. And, you know, she says the two-syllable word that involves male cows and muck. you know, she calls him on that. And I'm just waiting for one reporter to actually say, you're full of... and just walk off. Do you know what I mean? We need a reporter to just go...
I would think that maybe there was a faint heartbeat left in American journalism if one reporter would do that.
That'd be great, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but what it turns out to be... Andy, it's the whole business out of the Old Testament where...
Tell you what, no, I've got a plan.
All right.
Okay. Next time Bush comes over here, okay, you guys authorize me to be head on British reporter.
Oh, God, yes.
And I'll go and ask him the damn question. Okay, we'll take a bunch of questions from the listeners,
mm-hmm.
and we'll come up with the best one between us, and I'll go and ask him the question.
Well, we are as legitimate a news organization as Talon News ever was, Jeff Gannon got to ask him oodles of questions.
Well, that's it, but the thing is, over here, if we have a press conference where people are allowed to ask questions, well, the BBC, ITV and Sky have to ask a question. AP or Reuters will get one, and then... hey, you never know. If I dress smartly enough and act nicely enough beforehand, I might be able to ask.
Well, you know, you've been our UK correspondent for quite some time now, so you know, I think that would be wonderful.
Cool.
Official. I don't know how much we can pay in the way of a salary.
Well, if I have to pay a huge amount of money to go to Scotland to cover a conference, then maybe if you help me with the expenses, we'll talk about that. But yeah, I'm willing to do it for the love, man.
That's cool. That's a great idea, Andy. It's a wonderful idea.
Cool. Well, get everybody out there who's listening to think of a question.
Okay. Well, everybody knows now. And I imagine there will be some sort of a question-forming forum going on any second now in the chat rooms over there over at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com.
Well, I've got to admit, I have real problems with those chat rooms. I think it's because I'm using it's something to do with the servers around here, but I keep just getting dropped all the time. But, yeah, it is quite fun in there.
It is. And, I know there's people with dial-up that have a devil of a time in there, too.
Yeah, I think it's something to do with my BT server down this end, like the mainframe and stuff. It's fine for like radio streams, but I think chat's just a bit too heavy on it.
Well, and the other angle is you can run over to headonradio.com, everything but the word network, headonradio.com, and put it in print over there at the message boards.
All right, cool. Okay, well, yeah, we'll have to think about putting a message up. I'll let you do that, but I'll be glad to it.
All right, cool. Sounds good.
Wicked. We'll have a good one. Love to Agnes.
Absolutely. And back at Hazel.
Yeah, man. Definitely.
All right. Take care.
Take care.
Have a wonderful morning.
Goodbye, mate.
Bye now. Keep it rolling or take a break, dear? No. Keep it rolling. Jim is with us. Hey, Jim, you're head on.
Good evening.
How are you?
Fine. Bob, what are you wearing?
What am I wearing?
Never mind.
All right, Jim.
Chanel,
never mind.
Chanel number 5 and nothing else, Jim.
Oh, God. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. First, I want to ask a question, and I don't know what this means. What is this about an inflatable blow-up doll with a remote control?
It's just it's a lot of fun that the guys have over at Fourth Estate Radio. No, it goes back to when... George Bush made some statement in his weekly radio address a month or so ago where he said that the biggest enemy that our troops face now in Iraq comes from garage door openers and cell phones.
Oh, he said that?
If I'm lying, I'm dying. He said it, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he was talking about the fact that, you know, common, ordinary household implements are
right.
being used to trigger these IEDs.
IEDs. Well, I guess, yeah, they can use them. Yeah, that's true.
And, you know, it's funny. My dad and I were talking last night about the leaps in technology that have been made with remote controls. We got our first remote control television because at the tender age of 10, I went on strike and refused to go and change the channel for dad anymore. I'm kidding. But, no, we got our first color TV, and it was a remote control Zenith, and it had a remote with it, Jim, that had three buttons, and they had little bars, and it was all done via sound. It generated a sound wave that then turned the channel or turned the volume or turned it off.
Did y'all have a dog?
No.
I was just to say, if you did, he probably went nuts.
But the funny thing was, you could take your belt, you know, the post and the buckle itself, the metal piece, and you could stand there and shake that belt buckle at the TV, and it would change the channels. I had a buddy who had the same thing with a garage door opener. And when he forgot his remote, he stood out in front of the garage door and jingled his keys, and the garage door went up.
Technology is just amazing, isn't it?
Oh, it is. It absolutely is.
Well, you know, speaking of blow-up dolls, I have a story to tell you about those.
Okay.
Well, that's not too bad.
Okay.
These three gentlemen went to, a house of ill fame, okay,
mm-hmm.
for an evening sport. And the madam only had two available women. But she did, and they were all three as dumb as a bag of rocks.
Right.
All three of them were.
Yeah.
There's no ethnicity involved here. Okay. And so she put a blow-up doll in one of the rooms with where they would go. And they had their fun, and she came down, and she said, well, boys, did y'all have a good time? And one of them said, yeah, but, you know, I bit this one girl on the window. And she broke wind and flew out the window. I just bit her on the neck, and she broke wind and flew out the window.
Oh, God.
Well, I guess he got half his money back. But, you know, on a more serious note, it would look as though things are beginning to sort of, maybe this ice flow is beginning to break. Or there is a fall of some type.
Well, the most important part in this process, Jim, I'm not kidding, is... what passes for journalism in this country. If they'll dig and if they'll cover this, then it can become something.
Well, you know, eventually they're going to have to report some of this stuff. I mean, John Kerry's making some pretty loud noises. And, you know, he was talking with a number of reporters, Wolf Blitzer, and also what's-his-face here, Chris Matthews, on tonight's news. And, you know, Kerry's proposing that to the Iraqis, either get your act together or we're going all over the horizon on May 15th. And that's it.
Yeah, I read that story, and it's not a bad idea.
No. We would just withdraw our troops from your company, your country, and, you know, we'll just let you handle it yourself, because obviously you're not going to, and our presence there is not assisting you in the process, and you're not utilizing its, our presence there. And we're tired of having our kids come home like this just because you people couldn't get your act together. And, you know, I think he's got a good idea there.
Well, you know, he does. He does. And there is some momentum building. I think the news, it was in the news yesterday, Jim, that four Republicans, Jones from North Carolina and three others, one of whom was Ron Paul from Texas, have signed on to a discharge petition in the House of Representatives demanding a floor debate on the status of the Iraq War. Now, they've only got 79 Democrats and four Republicans, but still, that's a goodly number of individuals.
Oh, yeah, that's a third.
You know, I think one of the things, we need to find out if Nick Rahal signed off on that.
Well, I think that pretty soon people are going to start to jump on the bandwagon, and, you know, because I think, really, when you look at the way DeLay had the House, I mean, he ran that House like a plantation, you know?
Yeah.
And now that one of the head overseers is gone, maybe they all begin to, you know, come out of the fields and stand on the porch of the big house and wonder what the hell's going on.
Well, it would be kind of, I would have a little bit more faith in the future of the Republic if that would happen. But they need, I mean, they got, what, 84, 83 now? They need 218 signatures, Jim.
Well, that's okay. The longest journey begins with the first step, my friend.
Well, that's true. That's true.
I mean, you know, you just can't get everything you want when you want it.
No.
Eventually.
But if someone out there can look up, if someone out there can look up the number of this discharge petition, I certainly think it would be worth our effort for all of us to call our elected members of the House and say, if you're not already signed on it, sign on it yesterday.
Well, you know, I've already done that with Rahal, and I've just, you know, we'll see. But as far as what is going to happen here, nothing is really going to happen to Mr. Bush and his cohorts until after November, really, unless there are some really momentous events.
Well, but Jim, how much more do we have to find out?
But, basically. Mechanically, the only way he can be impeached is for us to have numbers in the House and in the Senate. And let's hope that the events that are occurring now are going to convince people finally of the types of people these guys really are.
Well, you know, one of the things that I followed the chat room a little bit during the program, and someone in there mentioned apparently Senator Stevens from Alaska has taken a 20-day powder or something. I mean, these people are beginning to collapse a little bit.
They are. I mean, you know, it's not going to come all at once, and it won't be as quickly as people like it. Things never are. But eventually and slowly, as I said last night, that pendulum is getting to swing back the other way. And I'll guarantee you, if we can get more numbers in the House and Senate, then they can have the leverage to bring these people to justice. And when they do, I really think that Mr. Bush and Cheney and the whole crowd up there are, you know, due for not only impeachment, but also conviction. And then after that, they need to be handled by the court system.
Well, I agree.
And as far as I'm concerned, George Bush and Dick Cheney are just as guilty of what I consider to be crimes against peace, crimes against humanity. And, you know, they should be in the same dock as Saddam Hussein.
Nothing could be closer to the truth.
I mean, that's just the way I see it. You know, if I were a juror, and I hate to say this, but, you know, normally I'm against capital punishment. But in a case like this, if I had to vote in order to be a juror on, you know, that in that situation, I would give them the death penalty.
Well, you know, there are some things that, you know, Nuremberg is the controlling legislation.
I mean, these men have taken lives cavalierly, and they have done so without what I consider to be any real regard or compassion, and they have done so recklessly. And I think they have done so in such a way as to parallel any dictator in history.
Well, I think the operative words that you're looking for, maybe, Jim, are maliciously, with malice aforethought.
Exactly.
I mean, this is
no difference between these guys right now and what has happened since 2003 than those same guys who stood in the dock in Nuremberg in 1946.
Precisely. And there's
no difference.
And just to use a running analogy that we have propagated previously on this show, I can see no difference between these guys and street thugs.
Well, yeah, I mean, really, and the tactics they use are just kind of like, as far as I'm concerned, the Sicilian or the Russian mafia, just as deadly.
Or the Yakuza.
You got it. I mean, you know, whether it's concrete overshoes or whether it's having a iron pipe rammed at your throat or whatever, or ruining your reputation or placing you in a position of serious danger. I mean, or embarrassing you, whatever. I mean, they don't care.
Well, you know, I've got a story here that Dr. Bill O'Brien sent me. Jim, and he said, you know, have these guys no shame whatsoever?
No, they don't.
It turns out, Jack Abramoff, I mean, we knew he was sleazy. Now, how bad, but this is the height of sleaze. It turns out, Jim, that Jack Abramoff proposed to sell his services to the government of Sudan to clean up their image in the United States for what they're doing in Darfur.
Well, he'd be just the man to do it. That would be right up his alley, don't you think?
Yeah.
I mean, that low down and having no real sense of decency or morality.
You know, but Jack Abramoff runs around with his funny hats on, whether it's a ball cap or that black fedora or something, because he's trying to win sympathy with the Orthodox Jewish community.
I know.
And yet this guy would go out and try to put a patina of acceptability or respectability on genocide?
Sure. Listen, these people have no conscience. Their conscience is dead. They don't have any sense of guilt. They don't have any sense of morality. And, you know, the thing about it is, I don't think they really have any sense of their own mortality, because they're going to have to pay for this.
Well,
you
know? Yeah.
One way or the other.
And I hope the bill comes due soon.
Well, I think it is. And, you know, like I say, the handwriting is already on the wall, and Belshazzar has had his feast. And now it's time for them to reap the whirlwind of what they've sown. I really believe that. Just like Andy said, you know, I think he was saying something to the effect that these guys are what, like the mafia, or worse to that effect. I heard him use the term concrete overshoes or whatever, or overcoats. Yeah. I mean, they would use any kind of method against anybody who stayed in their way, and I've said this before. And if a person adopts that type of strategy, then he doesn't deserve any other type of treatment except that.
I tend to concur. Jim, thanks so much. We've got to roll along. It's time for our Cup of Joe report.
Don't mean to be too severe there, but that's just the way I see it.
No, I don't think it's severe at all. This is the debate that must be allowed in this country. I had a story a couple of nights ago about the fact that no one is allowed to talk about war crimes and George Bush in the same sentence, because it's simply not permitted to suggest that George Bush commits war crimes.
Well, he does and has. And what I'm saying is this. Let's handle it legally, and let's do what we did back in 1946. And if we have to take, you know, if we could take him to The Hague or whatever, I don't care. Like they did Milosevic.
Yeah.
But I think they need to stand in the dock and answer for what they've done.
I do, too.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Jim. All right, quick break. Like I said, it's time for our evening's Cup of Joe report. Remember, Joe will be joining us as the newest member of the Head On Radio Network come Saturday night, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, this same stream. Hope you'll be there and join us. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
There's a breeze that makes my breathing not so easy. I've had my lungs checked out with x-rays. I've smelled the hospital always. Someday I'll have a disappearing hairline.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to.
Apparently, on the right-hand side, on the right wing, the leadership in the Republican Party is not so cozy with the pro-life movement. They say pro-life. That's bull. If they were pro-life, they wouldn't send people to die in battle. If they were pro-life, you know, they would put money into a temporary aid for needy families, TANF, which is an entitlement. If they were pro-life, they would help with creating better pensions for us to live our remaining years in relative peace and serenity rather than having to work until you're 85 years old in order to make a living. If they were pro-life, if they were really, really pro-life, then we wouldn't be in the middle of a war. Bottom line.
Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. President Bush's approval ratings are down to 36%, even on Fox News. But that number, while remarkably low for any president since we began taking these polls, is remarkably high when you consider how incredibly corrupt and incompetent this administration and the Republican leadership has been. There have been more than a dozen indictments of high-ranking Republicans, including very important people like the Vice President's Chief of Staff, Scooter Libby, and Republican House Leader Tom DeLay. These aren't small-time players here. These are people who sit at or near the very top of the pyramid of power that is the Republican Party. And yet, despite all the corruption, despite the lower quality of life, the almost criminally inept response to Hurricane Katrina, events in Iraq, high gas prices, etc., more than one-third of the people polled still support Mr. Bush. Why, I ask myself, is this so? I think a lot of these people are simply misinformed. They get their news from a very narrow source, or they don't get any news at all. But probably half of that 36% choose to trust Mr. Bush's word simply because he claims to be a Christian. Trust is an important thing. It can mean placing your reputation, your livelihood, or even your life in someone's hand. As a liberal, I trust in the social contract to help me survive when times are bad, and we all have to trust technology we don't understand because so much of our daily lives depend upon it. But trust should be earned, not just assumed. Mr. Bush has done little to earn the trust of his followers. I wonder when they'll begin to recognize this. Now get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show via streaming audio every Saturday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Head On Radio Network.
I know, we've played it already once tonight. That's okay. I want to hear it again. I want to bang my head into a wall or something.
Now war is declared, and battle come down.
Sing it.
London calling to the underworld. Come out of the cupboard, you boys and girls. London calling, now don't look to us. Beatlemania is putting the dust. London calling, see we ain't got no swing except for the rain.
of the truncheon thing. No, we did that for a reason. I want to share this story with you. We're going to go right back to the phones. And, of course, the number is 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. Was there caffeine in my decaf, honey?
No, there wasn't.
Okay. for a reason, that song. What an anthem. And this would be good story for our UK correspondent, Andy. British anti-terrorism detectives escorted a man from a plane after a taxi driver had earlier become suspicious when he started singing along to a track by punk band The Clash, police said Wednesday. Detectives halted the London-bound flight at Durham Tees Valley Airport in northern England, and Haraj Man, 24, was taken off. The taxi driver had become worried on the way to the airport because Mann had been singing along to The Clash's 1979 anthem, London Calling, which features the lyrics, "Now war is declared and battle come down," while other lines warn of a meltdown expected. Jesus, Mary and Joseph. Mann told British newspapers the taxi had been fitted with a music system which allowed him to plug his MP3 player, and he had been playing The Clash, Procol Harum, Led Zeppelin, and The Beatles to the driver. He didn't like Led Zeppelin or The Clash, but I don't think there was any need to tell the police, Mann told the Daily Mirror. A Durham police spokeswoman said Mann had been released after questioning, but he missed his flight! The report was made with the best of intentions, and we wouldn't want to discourage people from contacting us with genuine concerns, she said. I hope the accent was okay. Welcome to Terror World. I mean, he's got his little earbuds in, and you know how it is. I got headphones on right now, okay? I am stone deaf to the rest of the world. I don't even know how loud I'm talking. I can only tell from what's coming through the headphones. All right? That's just how it is, and you know how it is too. It's kind of embarrassing when you've got the headphones on. You know you're singing along with the song, and next thing you realize, people are staring at you because dude's crazy because you get real loud. So he's got the little headphones on. London Calling.
Oh, please don't sing.
Stop it. War is declared and battle come down. And I mean, that's what goes on when you got the headphones on. And this dude gets rousted for singing along to a 1979 Procol Harum? Led Zeppelin? No, that must have been when the levee breaks. Gee, many Christmas. So, you know, hey, you want to be subversive? Play The Clash. They're still subversive after all these years. Yay, us! My God, they would have put him on a rendition flight if he'd been a few tracks up in the damned album and played Spanish Bombs! Holy cow! A world that is led by cowards becomes a coward itself. I'm gonna be listening to my Clash just everywhere I go now! I mean, it's part of a pattern. You know, this went down in the UK. Well, just a few nights ago, we found out that the lady who got busted by the cop for having a bushit, B-U-S-H-I-T, bushit, sticker on the back of her car, she got a ticket written to her by a police sergeant based upon a statute that had been declared unconstitutional in Georgia in 1991! Okay? There is a pattern to all of this. Let's go to David calling from near Nashville, Tennessee. Hey, David, you're head on.
Bob, you need to understand that to get back to values that matter to America, we've got to get back to the values that matter to America.
Okay.
I can't, I can't believe that guy in Georgia did this. Yeah, I can. Sure, of course I can.
Well, you know, he attends the first sanctimonious holiness temple and herpetological seminary there, Brother David, and as a result, he has been told on a number of occasions that anybody who says anything bad about our dear leader George Bush is somehow a subversive.
Pass the one that's poisonous, would you?
And a nice swallow of the strychnine and a little bit of moonshine chaser. The jar with the peach in the bottom, if you please.
Don't swallow the pit. Oh, but I love the idea that some taxi driver decides that because of the clash, the guy has to be arrested. You know?
What kind of a nerd is this? I mean, we're talking about the UK.
Miracle.
Who doesn't know the clash in the UK?
Probably a guy that got there about 5 years ago. But, you know, I called in because I was having such a big laugh about the channel, the real remote from my era, in the three-channel era, and what a revelation it was when something beyond that kid running across the room to go from channel, in my era, from channel 6 to channel 10 to channel 13.
Mm-hmm.
With a mother screaming, "Don't change it that often, young man. You'll wear out that."
Yes, yes. Don't turn that knob so fast.
Don't make it go click, click, click. I mean, you'll wear it out, and those things are probably, oh, my God, they're probably $4 or $5 to get it fixed, and we may have to send it into the shop to do it. Oh, it was a wonderful era. And the idea that garage door openers. I remember when those things came along. It was like such a revelation.
Oh, I used to, when you become a parent, and you've already experienced some of this, you get your payback. So, you know, when the kids are tormenting Agnes and me, I think back to the times that I was standing behind my dad's easy chair with my belt in my hand, shaking that damn belt buckle, making the channels, changing it. What's wrong with this confounded thing? I didn't push the button.
I remember one of those color TVs, too, because there was no way in my house was there going to be a color TV. And I went to a friend's house, and his father owned a business, and his father was a Republican. And his father owned bought an Oldsmobile in even years for himself and bought a Buick in odd-numbered years for the mother. True story. I'll drop dead if it's not a true story. And they bought the first color TV I ever saw. And in the fall of 1961, of course, the Yankees were in the World Series, and I went over to his house to watch the World Series, and, well, David, what do you think? And I said, well, when Mickey Mantle isn't purple, I'd like to have one of these. Because there was no way. I mean, everything was, the grass was gray,
Did this have that like insert thing in front of the screen there? No.
This was a full on. It was meant to be a color television. Their hope was it would be a color television. All the rest of it, but it had a ways to go because every 10 or 15 minutes somebody had to go quote adjust the color. And what was really funny was well off people throughout Eastern Tennessee were nudging each other in the ribs going, honey, what's a magenta? this color, what's a cyan? Because they had these knobs on the front of this thing. You had to adjust it.
Yeah.
The idea that your pal could stand out in the driveway and make the car keys open the garage door.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Bob, you know what? Technology's come a long way. That same garage door opener today
is blowing up.
Can turn a kid into pink mist that signed up for college money.
Ain't that the truth?
Ain't life grand? And it's all because George Bush is president and all of the ugly neocons and all of the thieves and liars and crooks and backbiting SOBs put him there. There's figures out about how the top 3%
Wait a minute. Don't forget about the old Jewish voters in Palm Beach County who voted for Pat Buchanan because they love him so well. Don't forget them. They put George there, too. Oh, God.
Yeah, not that a voting machine ever made a mistake.
No,
voting
hell no.
Voting machines don't make mistakes because Mr. Diebold promised W he'd have it. But there was a certain loop closed in my mind when you said that about keys jingling in your childhood in a driveway would open a door. Well, now then, technology's come away. Now then, they put kids in graves in places they should have never traveled to.
And they bring them home, and they unload them with forklifts in cardboard boxes.
Anonymously, and we're not allowed to look. We're not allowed to count. We're not allowed to commiserate. We're not allowed to agree, to grieve. We're encouraged as a nation to buy more Chinese decals for big-ass SUVs.
Yep. Yep. And, you know, I hit on something last night just as we were chatting, David. I forget who it was with. Maybe it was David from Maine. But this idea, you know, think about the war. Think about how soon it was after shock and awe that you started seeing those stupid yellow magnets in your local Rippy Mart.
They knew. I know a little bit about those timelines to have folks in China create things. It takes a while.
Yeah.
And I hope that little flight recorder tape, you know, that they've put together for our benefit, I want to hear what is it, 92 or 93? I forget the number. United.
Yeah, 93.
I want to hear that tape. You know, they played it in the court today while Giuliani told us how torn up he was about things. Oh yeah, now there's a juxtaposition that'll spin your head around.
Yeah.
That creep talking about how disturbed he was.
It was battle. That sucker's never seen battle.
Nope. And, you know, George Bush cannot, has not, will not, has never, I don't know how many more grammatical errors I need to make to hit that, he has never said anything in sentences that read well on video, that sounded good when you saw it replayed, unless it was scripted for him. And that idea of him up on that pile of rubble with that, I hear you now, da 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 da, he cannot speak extemporaneously. He's proven that time after time after time. But he spoke well that day. Reckon he'd had some handlers on that little speech?
I'm kind of guessing, aren't you?
We got guys talking about hearing the other explosions once they were in the building. Don't we have that knocking around the world today?
We kind of do.
Yeah.
I mean, well, how pitiful is it, David, that the guy has had to go to Venezuela to get heard? The guy who says he heard the explosions going off.
Well, you've been vigorous and courageous and 100% correct to beat on the American media as it's now constituted, but it's nothing like I grew up with. I don't understand. I can't imagine why Walter Cronkite isn't on a street corner. Why isn't he replaying that scene from that great movie where the fellow's hanging out the window? I'm mad as hell, and I'm not going to take it anymore. Where the hell is Walter Cronkite right now?
Well, you know, he's on the lecture circuit, but he's out there on the lecture circuit talking to the choir.
Oh.
You know, the choir doesn't need to hear Walter anymore. What are you going to get the Kool-Aid drinkers together and tell them? You know, maybe he could be invited to Jerry Falwell's Mooney University commencement speech instead of John McCain. Yeah, that'd go over.
Oh, jeez. Well, it just needs to be more vigorous.
Yeah, it does.
You know, speaking in polite verbiage to nice folks in swell clothes ain't got anything to do with what needs to be happening. Because nice folks in swell clothes ain't going to get their hands dirty in the street. Stitches from a blow from a police baton might not look good on their picture for their resume to get past security for some slick-ass job in a company that's owned by Bushites. Time for a little radicalism, I say.
I'm right there with you. Let's go march somewhere. What do you say?
Hey, I'll take a quick drive. You know, my truck's in good shape. I could fill it up. I could be in your neighborhood by 4 a.m. Make that 6.
Yeah, no speeding. I mean, we're not gonna have any law breaking on the way to the revolution, David.
No, I might stop somewhere. I might stop somewhere for a bit of libation and a breakfast today at a spot that, you know, covered the four basic food groups: salt, sugar, grease, and beer.
Amen, brother. All right, David.
Let's make room for somebody else.
All right, thanks. Take care, David.
I shall.
Our pal David near Nashville, Tennessee. I tell you what, before we go back to the phones, I want to share something with you. Our intrepid correspondent, Horn Radio newsman Bruce Birch, was in Charlotte, North Carolina today in the same town as Dear Leader, only he was hanging out with a lot better class of people, and he filed this report.
This is a Head-On Radio Network special report. I'm Bruce Birch. George Bush visited Charlotte, North Carolina today in an effort to bolster his sagging poll numbers related to his war. As he arrived in the Queen City, hundreds of protesters assembled to express their outrage at Bush and his criminal regime. Protesters came from hundreds of miles around and assembled across the street from the theater at Piedmont Community College, where Bush addressed the nonpartisan but mostly right-wing World Affairs Council. There were some tense moments outside the venue between police officers and protesters who felt that they were being treated as the criminals when the real criminal, they felt, was inside the theater giving the speech. One elderly lady had her own words to share about Bush.
I think the biggest thing is every night I watch PBS and the news and see all those young men being killed, you know, and it just tears my heart apart, and I feel so sorry for those mothers, I mean, and try to put myself in their place, and it's just horrible, and I don't understand why we're over there to start with, and I think he should bring the boys home, and, I feel like, you know, he's not going to give in, and probably the next president is going to have to clean up his mess.
And as the crowd outside the theater expressed their outrage, a lone member of the audience expressed his as well. Harry Taylor let the president know exactly how he felt.
I don't have a question. What I want to say to you is that I, in my lifetime, I have never felt more ashamed of nor more frightened by my leadership in Washington, including the presidency, by the Senate and
now, let her
the
say,
House.
Let her speak.
Yeah. I feel like, despite your rhetoric, that compassion and common sense have been left far behind during your administration. And I would hope from time to time that you have the humility and the grace to be ashamed of yourself, inside yourself. And I also want to say that I really appreciate the courtesy of allowing me to speak what I'm saying to you right now. That is part of what this country's about.
It is, yeah.
And I know that this doesn't come welcome to most of the people in this room, but I do appreciate that. I don't have a question, but I just want to make that comment to you.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
And all this was before the people who were protesting Bush knew that he had been directly implicated in the leak of the name of a CIA operative. This has been a Head-On Radio Network special report. My name is Bruce Birch.
Thank you very, very much, Bruce. Yay, Bruce. And yay, that dude in the audience. Yay. And I assume the only response from Dear Leader was, ah! Dear God. Great stuff. You know, this is the kind of amazing thing you get when people just decide that they want to have themselves a network. Next thing you know, there is one. The only limits to our abilities are the limits that we place upon ourselves. Let's go back to the phones. Our good friend Gene has been waiting a long time out in Oregon. Hey, Gene, you're head on.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
Oh, busier than heck and ready to move.
Oh, is that coming along pretty well?
Kind of, sort of. I do the move tomorrow, and I'll be out of communicado until the 19th, so no computer, no head on, and I'm crying.
Oh.
I'm already going to withdrawal.
we'll be here when you're hooked back up, I promise.
Verizon just better work, that's all I got to say. Sorry, that's shameless plug. Two things regarding this whole thing. If we only had a remote control for that radio receiver Bush has in the back of his back,
mm-hmm.
for the talking thing,
yeah.
Boy, there's some things I'd love to say. And I was kind of surprised. You know, it was funny. We call the leader stupid, but apparently he's not stupid enough to shout the guy down. The crowd was plenty stupid enough for that. That's what really depresses me. It wasn't so much Bush himself as it, hold it now. It was the guys around this guy, and it's like, wait a minute. I mean, it almost sounds to me, I hate to say it, but are we getting the leader we deserve?
You know, I'm not sure how to answer that, Gene, but we are. Not you and me.
Yeah, I know.
No, we deserve a Marcus Aurelius type.
Yeah.
But no, the people that voted for this punk are getting exactly what they deserve.
Well, I wish we didn't have to get it. I wish they would get it before we got. You know, if we didn't have to get it on the way to them getting theirs.
Yeah, well, that's the problem. That's why it's up to us to fix it.
Yeah, that's true. I got a quick story, and it's not political, but it's kind of along the lines of the blowout dowel thing.
Okay.
Okay, I got up this morning, and I was sick. So, unfortunately, I didn't quite get to the bathroom fast enough to, you know, to throw up and get clean, you know.
Yeah.
So I had to clean that all up. So the attendant shows up a few minutes later, and I'm there in the, you know, washing, she says to me, here, you go in the closet. And then she turns around and says, better yet, go in the closet and stay there. And then she says, I bet you've never heard anybody tell you that before, have you? And I said, actually, I have, but not that obviously. Of course, she says, don't make me a thing, Gene. I feel like our side is being said, our side is being told to go in the closet and stay there. We don't want to deal with you. So that kind of ties in.
Yeah. And that's what we get on a daily basis from the media. That's when I walked through the living room, Wolf Blitzer was talking about Katie Couric instead of the single biggest presidential piece of malfeasance since Richard Nixon.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, I'll be so glad when... I don't know what to say. I just want it to be over, or changed or something. I'm willing to march. I'm willing to do a lot of things, which I can't repeat on the radio or the internet.
Yeah, Fred's listening.
Yeah, all right, then, Fred. But I just I'm sick of this. I want to change. Anyway, I got to get back to packing.
Oh, good luck.
Okay.
Please, go by the library or whatever's nearby, and just drop a line, okay?
Okay, I'll do that, and if I find anything cool on the web, I'll send it your way.
I appreciate it. I appreciate everything you send, Gene. I'm sitting here, that story about the newly discovered pyramid.
Oh, yeah?
Is that just the neatest thing you've read in a long time?
It is, and people up here think people from down there are stupid. Well... apparently not.
Thanks, Gene.
All right.
Have a great evening.
See ya.
And best of luck with the boxes.
Thanks.
Bye now.
Bye.
And a quick break for our top of the hour news. Then we'll come back and do hour number 3 for this, the Thursday night edition of Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
walking through forests of hungry hearts. Men scoff at the monkeys who live in that dark tent. Down by the water hole, drunk every Friday, eating their nuts, saving their raisins for Sunday. Lions and tigers who wait in the shadows, they're flat but they're lazy and sleep in green meadows. Well, that's bongo in the jungle. Well, that's all right. Bye.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he that... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
Could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, hi. How you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know... One small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Head on Radio News, I'm Bruce Birch. What did the president know, and when did he know it? A generation ago, that question brought down Richard Nixon's criminal regime. Now the question is being asked again, this time about George Bush. Published reports Thursday show that George W. Bush himself authorized the leak of Valerie Plame's identity as a CIA agent. Former Cheney aide Scooter Libby gave that testimony before the grand jury impaneled by Patrick Fitzgerald. Mr. Bush visited Charlotte, North Carolina today to shore up support for his flagging war. Bush was met with a mostly friendly crowd, though one man, Harry Taylor of Charlotte, expressed his displeasure with Bush's style of leadership.
I don't have a question. What I want to say to you is that in my lifetime, I have never felt more ashamed of nor more frightened by my leadership in Washington, including the presidency. And I would hope from time to time that you have the humility and the grace to be ashamed of yourself, inside yourself.
Outside, more than 300 protesters waving signs reading "The World Can't Wait," "Drive Out the Bush Regime," chanted slogans such as "Do Your Job" at the press corps, "Arrest Bush, Not Citizens," and "The Criminal Is Inside." The Senate reached agreement Thursday in the so-called immigration debate. The deal would offer some sort of legalized status to the millions of immigrants already working for poverty wages in the U.S. It also would regulate the future flow of people seeking a better life in the United States. Once finalized, the deal will have to be taken to a conference committee with the House of Representatives, where Republicans want to turn those 11 million workers into criminals. Georgia Representative Cynthia McKinney apologized Thursday for her part in a kerfluffle with the Capitol Police officer. On the floor of the House, Ms. McKinney said, quote, "I am sorry that this misunderstanding happened at all, and I regret its escalation, and I apologize," unquote. Disgraced Republican Congressman Tom DeLay is demanding that McKinney be subjected to an ethics investigation. Speaking of Tom DeLay, his House seat will remain vacant until the November election. Texas Governor Rick Perry said Thursday he won't call a special election to fill DeLay's seat. That means that the people of Sugarland, Texas, won't have a voice in the House until the general election. Tom DeLay also, the disgraced and resigning former majority leader in the House of Representatives, can, once he retires in a few weeks, draw a $67,000-a-year pension from the U.S. government. DeLay, charged with money laundering, resigned from his post Thursday to use his campaign money for legal fees. This is News on the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
13 million. Who will give me 14? I have 14 million. Do I hear 15? 15, 16. There to you, sir.
Political power doesn't come cheap in America.
Sold for $22 million. Another rollback in air quality regulations.
George Bush understands that money equals power. His campaign spent nearly $50 million this March alone. That's a record.
Next on the block, the First Amendment. Who will give me 1 million?
Just because it's a democracy doesn't mean it's free. How much is your vote worth?
Easily paid for by billionairesforbush.com.
Former New York Mayor Rudy Giuliani took the stand Thursday in the death penalty trial of Zacharias Moussaoui. Giuliani, who had an affair with a woman not his wife while he was mayor of New York and lied about it, told the jury that September the 11th, 2001, quote, was battle, unquote. Giuliani testified in hopes of getting to see Moussaoui killed for his nominal participation in the events of that day. A report by the Center for Media and Democracy entitled Fake TV News, Widespread and Undisclosed, was released today. The report documents 77 television stations that have aired so-called news content that was actually sponsored content. Corporate firms are pre-producing content called VNRs, or video news releases, prepackaged segments that many television stations are airing unedited during their news programming, and not identifying them as sponsored content. In Ohio, three Cuyahoga County elections officials were charged with misdemeanor and felony counts of failing to follow the state elections law. These indictments are related to the 2004 presidential election. Apparently, these officials, who are still actively working for the Cuyahoga County Elections Department, illegally altered a test recount to keep from having to do a full recount of ballots in that county. Officials in Ohio say more indictments are likely. Donald Rumsfeld and Condoleezza Rice are at odds over statements she made last week. Rice said that the U.S. made, quote, thousands of tactical errors, unquote, in the handling of Bush's war on Iraq. Rumsfeld says this is false, that the enemy has a brain and adjusts to tactical decisions. FCC Chairman Kevin Martin today suggested that even more centralization of media ownership was on the horizon, sharply criticizing the rule disallowing newspaper publishers from owning television stations in that same market. Martin even went so far as to suggest to the assembled publishers that they work to convince the public of the necessity of this rule change. The town of Bridgeville in Northern California is now up for sale again on eBay. The owner, Bill Krall, is hoping to turn what he bought for $700,000 into a cool $1 million profit. Krall said he has had offers from as far away as China and Germany, but no bids have been registered on the eBay site. For the Head On Radio Network, I'm Bruce Birch.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
In my conversation with Gene, I mentioned a story that he had sent to me. And as I saved it, I printed it and saved it because I wanted to share it with you. Now, we all understand I'm an archaeology geek, okay? Complete geek. But part of the reason that I feel this phony immigration debate that supposedly they reached an accord on in the Senate today, and we're going to legalize the people who are already here. Legalization, see, they're getting it, more blue smoke and mirrors. Legalization is not the issue. The issue is a living wage. The issue is paying people enough so that they don't listen to their babies crying hungry in the night and wish that they themselves had never been born. That is the immigration issue. Yeah, what were the numbers that Jim shared with us last night? That it would cost us $10 more a year to pay a decent rate to the people who pick our vegetables, harvest our lettuce and our carrots, our celery and our eggplant. Because Americans spend next to nothing on fresh food anymore. Maybe that ties in with the story from a year or so ago that pointed out that for the first time in 50 or 60 years, the United States last year imported more food than it grew for itself. If you sit back and think about something like that, it's cause, oh boy, is it cause to sit up in the middle of the night with a cold, beaded sweat on your forehead. What is this? This nation's 5% of the world population. We take up 25% of the resources, and we still can't feed ourselves? Holy hell. That's what we're up against. That's where we are. And people come north because they want to feed their young ones. And if you can try for even a moment to get into their shoes and hear the cries of hunger by night and by day, and donde papá, donde mamá, is that right? Where? Donde? I'm trying, okay? I don't speak Spanish quite as good as Dear Leader does. But now, Gene sent me this story, and it's, oh, God, it's fascinating. Archaeologists have discovered a huge 1,500-year-old pre-Hispanic pyramid. You know, we used to call that pre-Columbian. Has the nomenclature changed while I wasn't looking? Pre-Hispanic pyramid in a working-class district of Mexico City after digging into a hill used every year to depict the crucifixion of Christ. This is fascinating. The unnamed pyramid has the same sized base as the giant pyramid of the moon at the famous archaeological site of Teotihuacan, an hour's drive northeast of the capital, which is known as the City of the Gods and is Mexico's biggest ancient city. There are technologies there that we still have no idea how they calculated. It's absolutely fascinating. The Greeks are generally credited with being the first people to come up with the concept of pi, the mathematical concept of pi. And yet the measurements and the layout of the pyramid of the sun at Teotihuacan is such that it could not have been done without pi. And it's 2,000 years old. So, anyway, it turns out that for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years, people have reenacted what this story refers to as a particularly gory reenactment of the crucifixion. And, you know, Easter time is coming. I would love to go down there and see this. Because, you see, this is the craftiness of native peoples when they have religious persecution foisted onto them. Because 500 years ago, when those were still pyramids, and there were pretty gory rituals reenacted atop them in the Mexica culture, the Catholic priests burned entire libraries of writing. But they said it wasn't writing because it didn't look like their monochromatic, hateful, crabbed Castilian script. And they burned the entire known library of the Mexica people and the Toltecatl and the Tezcalteca, the Quiche, the Maya, the peoples of Michoacán, burned their entire culture to the ground and told them that their gods were demons because they demanded blood sacrifices, that Quetzalcoatl was a demon, that Coyolxochitl was a demon, that Huitzilopochtli was a demon. And in so doing, thought they had eradicated the entire culture of that amazing people. So a few hundred, you know, 100 years or so passes, and they think that Christianity has caught on, and there go the natives walking up that pyramid with their little cross, and they're reenacting a really, really gory version of the crucifixion with lots of self-flagellation and blood and thorny crowns. this is one of the I love it when the natives outwit their so-called betters. Because and I imagine it's probably not even remembered anymore. Most of these people don't even speak the Nahuatl anymore that they spoke, you know, their forebears spoke 500 years ago. They're just poor working people who are celebrating their religion. But along about this time of year, people, the indigenous peoples, had a ceremony called the Deer One Flayed. For those of you with an anthropological bent, you might recognize the myth of the Fisher King. But a young man was treated as a god for a time. And when the ceremony came around, he was ceremoniously killed without harming his skin, and they flayed his skin from his body and put it on and danced around and blessed people with the bone being the thigh bone of the young man. And it was said to bless and bring on fertility. Now, coincidentally, he had to have his skin flayed off of him. That means he had to be beaten with whips. Jesus Christ was beaten with whips. The Deer One had to mount the pyramid to climb up a hill to be sacrificed. Jesus Christ was taken up a hill to be sacrificed. So what you've got there to this day is the reenactment of the Deer One Flayed, carried out under the auspices of the Roman Catholic Church in Mexico. Houses built illegally on one side of the hill have also damaged the pyramid, which is about 60 feet tall, half the height of the Pyramid of the Moon, said Jesus Sanchez, the archaeologist on the site. The site will not be fully explored because it is now considered a religious center in its own right as part of the people's faith. Fascinating. The structure is protected because it is beneath 2 feet of earth. That's how much dirt has built up over the course of the 500 years or so of the Spanish occupation. So when I see, and, you know, I realize I'm romanticizing things, but when I see stories about the heroic efforts of people literally crossing deserts to come to America and work for rich Republican farmers for slave wages, I don't see someone who, as you know, the right wingers put it, an invader of the United States, and our nation will collapse if we keep taking these illegal immigrants. I see the great-great, multi-great-grandsons and granddaughters of people who were members of the Jaguar Knights and the Eagle Knights and the Arrow Knights. People who had flush toilets, frankly, that were simply amazing to the Europeans. One of them things, look at that water. Wonder where that water goes. Huh? You know, the same way that a toddler looks at the potty. Hernando Cortes looked at the Mexica's flush toilets. He stood on the mountains that ringed the Valley of Mexico, where Tenochtitlan sat in the middle of a lake, and said, "It is the most beautiful city I have ever seen in my life. It is like a Venice, only cleaner." And then he came in and he destroyed it to the ground. And they brought plague, and they brought death, and they brought misery. And they branded the cheeks of strong Mexica men with the letter G for guerra, prisoner of war. And they sent them to work in the obrajes. So I know the history of hell and misery and damnation that an entire race of people who built pyramids when Spaniards could barely get out of the damn mud who were contemplating numbers that only modern mathematics can contemplate now, when Western Europe was still counting on its fingers, and if they wanted to get past 10, had to take their damn shoes off. And I cannot hate those people. And, you know, this is the fascinating part, I think. The fascinating part is that this phony immigration debate, you know, back there, you know, we were looking at the CNN main page a little bit ago, and there was a headline, Lou Dobbs points out flaws in new immigration agreement. Well, at the very heart, like I've said a million times before, at the very heart of any Republican policy lies the hateful germinating seed of racism. And this is that. Just as 150 years ago, slave owners in the Deep South said, "Why, we can't free the Negroes. Next thing you know, they'll be taken over." That same seed of fear and terror that their hateful policies, if there's not an entire government built up around them to protect them, that their hateful policies will catch up with them along with its handmaiden retribution. That same fear manifests itself inside the immigration debate. Because the conquistadores thought they had accomplished the conquest of Mexico. They didn't. They didn't at all. They never were able to put down the culture that they thought they had entirely eliminated. Our Lady of Guadalupe was a religious mistranslation and fraud. What the man was talking about was Coatlalope, the snake woman. But because there was a Spanish town called Guadalupe, Coatlalope sounded cognate enough that they were able to translate it into a means of expanding the faith, if you will. And what these Republicans that so fear immigration, what these Republicans fear at their base level is that someday the poor people, all poor people, whether they be black or that beautiful copper of the Native American or Asian or poor and white, they fear in the depths of their soul that someday those poor people will rise up and give to those hateful racist bastards of the Republican Party what those hateful Republican racist bastards themselves know that they so richly deserve: equality. They fear that someday they really will be equal to the rest of the world instead of perched on some sort of pedestal made up of generations of accumulated human bones. Oh, we react in such shock and such angst to know about the blood sacrifice and the human sacrifice that took place atop the Templo Mayor in the center of Tenochtitlan. Oh, they killed people. They ripped out their very beating hearts. Tell me what is worse: to die that death which they viewed to be noble and an instant ticket to paradise, or to be given a life of perpetual drudgery and slavery that doesn't even end with your own death, but passes on into the next generation, and the generation that follows that, and the generation after that, until 500 years have passed. And the same thing is still being done that was done in 1529. Which is worse? I know you know the answer. And I apologize for being such an archaeology and culture geek. But it's when I read things like, churches were built atop ancient shrines and pyramids in sites around Mexico, including Chalma and Cholula near Mexico City. The Mexican capital's massive cathedral was built from stone pyramids, flattened by the Spaniards. It speaks to me. I don't know why. I've done archaeology. I've been in the pits. And you can learn entire. I mean, you can put together substantial amounts of data about entire cultures just from the places where they threw their garbage. And suddenly they're not a long forgotten people of whom we know nothing, because you can, if you will just try a little bit, step into their shoes, or moccasins, or sandals. These were peoples who had no cattle, no horses. The only dogs they had were little tiny techichis. Not even like a chihuahua. And they were used for food. There was fish in abundance and waterfowl, and the staples of corn and beans and squash and wonderful chiles. And they built a culture that traded literally from Lake Michigan to South America without even so much as a wheel, and calculated the precession of the equinoxes when no one in Europe could do it. And these are their children that are looked down on by godless, soulless, motherless Republicans. These are their children. And they have the nerve to call them illegal or criminal. I'll tell you a little secret. My position on this is I found out it has pissed off some liberals. But I will tell you a secret. My people, we've got a 250-year-old claim to be in here. Those people have a 28,000-year-old claim to being here. Shall we continue? Wouldn't you love to see this debate played out without all the hooey and all the crap and all the phony language? Wouldn't you love to see Tom Tancredo really have to debate who the damned immigrant is? I know that I would. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
On. On the last Fourth Estate, we heard from Robert Fisk.
What has now become a habit of compromising on the semantics of reporting in order to avoid criticism. You know, if you call a Jewish settlement or neighborhood a colony, you'll be criticized and called potentially anti-Semitic.
And a little bit of activist history and the Red Scare.
On the line with us right now, we have Kate Fossil, biographer of Ann Braden.
You know, I got interested in Ann's life because of her being a white Southern voice against racism. And
leave it to our listeners to ring up and keep it light.
I don't either. And, you know, Bruce is concerned about the remote control for his DVD player. I mean, I'm thinking about getting rid of the remote control on my blow-up doll. I mean, you know.
What's his name?
I never kiss and tell.
FourthEstateRadio.com.
Hi, everybody. This is Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man's thinking man. And if you're sick and tired of the same crap you hear on corporate radio, then I want to invite you to join me for the premiere of the Cup of Joe radio show, Saturday, April 8th, 2006, from 8 to 10 p.m. It's the wave of the future, the voice of the resistance, the truth that will set you free. So join me this Saturday from 8 to 10 p.m. on the Head On Radio Network.
Hey, have you got a minute? I'm going to say a word. You tell me what comes to mind. Are you ready?
Okay.
Tchaikovsky.
Gesundheit. Okay, what's the word?
No, see, that is the word. What does Tchaikovsky make you think of?
I don't know. Allergy season?
Hey there, how you doing?
What's up?
Who's Martha Graham?
She invented the graham cracker.
No kidding.
Yeah, before her there was only soda crackers.
Hard to imagine. Hey, young lady.
Yeah?
Does the name Man Ray mean anything to you?
Duh. The man ray is a kind of poisonous jellyfish, and it lives in the Gulf of Mexico.
Aha!
It's very deadly.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Tchaikovsky's music, Martha Graham's dance, and Man Ray's photography. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
One way employers honor their most cherished workers is by allowing them the pleasure of meeting a quota. Because management is so smart and in touch, the quota is always a realistic goal that can be easily met. Selling 80 sets of encyclopedias this week? No problem. The worker loves his quota because he knows it's merely a target and not a big axe constantly looming over his head that'll determine if he's still employed or living in a cardboard box next month. When you exceed your quota, you're sure to be given a huge bonus. Your boss would not just use this as an excuse to raise your quota in a devilish game of how much work can we pile on Sheldon before he starts babbling and stains his chair again. Yes, the rewards are great and easily obtainable for meeting your quota.
Because liberals built America. Head On with Bob Kincaid.
All right, downhill to the end of this Thursday night edition. I'm Bob Kincaid. The phone number, I've been greedy with the time tonight. I have not been doing conversation radio. Shame on me. I'm sorry. It's 877-443-2366, 877, the number 4, Head On. I really get them. Look, the first grown-up book I ever read, stop it, you with the dirty minds, just stop it right there. You know what I mean. The first grown-up book I ever read was a copy of C.W. Sarram's Gods, Graves, and Scholars. Big old thick book, too, and it got through it. Little bitty fella I was. And it stuck. And then there's, doggone it, can't think of his name. Never mind. But these topics speak to me. Other people, yeah, eyes roll back in the head, and I apologize. But it's perspective. It's context. It's, my God, can you imagine what was destroyed in those piles of books? There was medicine, there was lore, there was learning, but it was no good to the Spaniards because it wasn't written in nice Roman script. My God. Now, not one day is guaranteed, of course, but I really want to be here around about December the 23rd, 2012. Because the people who are on this planet at that time are going to be witness to something kind of unique. Because December 23rd, 2012 is the end of the current 5,000-year Mayan calendar round. And the Hopi people say that something big's going to break soon, too. And if you look at they call it the Sunstone. It's the Aztec calendar. You can use that to calculate time back about 55,000 freaking years. And it points out that, in each particular round or go-round or whatever, that the entirety of humanity, except for one or two people, has been destroyed. Yeah, they had that myth, too. That's why the Catholic priests who landed with Cortes were amazed. They thought they'd done found them some lost Jews. Really, not kidding. And, of course, that got propounded a few hundred years later again by Joseph Smith, and now the Mormon Church is all in an uproar because it turns out it ain't true. Imagine that, a religion telling you something that was an abject lie. Who'd have thunk it? But, yeah, they have these myths of destruction of humanity, except for, like, a man and a woman who hide in a cave, or a man and a woman who hide in a tree, or a man and a woman who get to high ground, or something like that. You know, it gets destroyed by flame, it gets destroyed by wind, it gets destroyed by water, ice. But December 23rd, yeah, see, this is worse than trying to talk about Turks and Kurds at the same time. December 23rd, 2012, the excrement is expected to hit the fan again, according to Mayan cosmogony.
I'm sorry.
Moving right along.
Please do. I don't want the word came out of your mouth.
I'm only here for Agnes's amusement. The rest, everybody else is just an afterthought. I'm just here to amuse my lovely wife. Now, I do have some other stories that I want to hit along the way. Not just the huge 1,500-year-old pyramid. But that story, Gene sent it to me, and then somewhere along the way I got another one from the Sydney, I think it's the Sydney Sunday Herald, and the title of it, Nightmare Journey to Reach the American Dream. Well worth the read. Yeah, SundayHerald.com. Look up Nightmare Journey. Yeah, it's a very, very interesting piece. And you'll see a little bit of what motivated my feelings on this matter. But backing up just a little bit, I referred to a piece the other night from alternet.org called When War Crimes Are Impossible by Norman Solomon, talking about the fact that the media doesn't allow us to even contemplate the idea that George Bush or any American leader could be guilty of a war crime, because we wouldn't do that. That's only something Hitler did and Pol Pot and Idi Amin and Slobodan Milosevic. You know, those funny people with the funny names. It couldn't possibly be done by somebody with a good, godly, upstanding, white name like Bush. Hell no, of course not. But Norman Solomon notes that a few weeks ago, when a class of seniors at Parsippany High School in New Jersey prepared for a mock trial to assess whether Bush has committed war crimes, that a media tempest then ensued. He writes, typical was the response from MSNBC host Tucker Carlson, who found the very idea of such accusations against Bush to be unfathomable. The classroom exercise, quote, implies people are accusing him of a crime against humanity, Carlson said. It's ludicrous. Really. You know, see, that's when you want to take dear Tucker, just lead him by the leading edges of his bow tie. You know, loosen it up a little bit if he starts to turn blue or anything. But lead him over to Iraq and show him a bombed out house with some baby splattered all over the rubble. And the baby wasn't even related to Saddam. Or maybe the baby wasn't even a Ba'athist. Or show Tucker Carlson the absolutely destroyed Christian community that under Saddam existed in Iraq, but it is no more. It's gone. It's over. In Tennessee, Norman Solomon writes, the Chattanooga Times Free Press, and battle cry of freedom and moral volcano, thundered in an editorial, I love it when they thunder, that some American educators would have students try our American, oh wait, I got the wrong damned accent, that some American educators would have students try our American president for war crimes during time of war tells us that our problems are not only with terrorists abroad. Jesus. The standard way for media to refer to Bush and war crimes in the same breath is along the lines of this lead into a news report on CNN's American Morning in late March with Solenoid O'Brien.
The Supreme Court's about to consider a landmark case and one that could have far-reaching implications. At issue is President Bush's powers to create war crimes tribunals for Guantanamo prisoners.
When the subject is war crimes, the President of the United States points the finger at others. Any suggestion that Bush should face such charges is assumed to be oxymoronic. I'm willing to contemplate them. Are you? I'm willing to go out and find the definition that the United States, not Britain, not Germany, not France, not anybody, not us. I'm willing to go out and have a look at the definition of war crime as promulgated by the United States at Nuremberg and compare that with what has been done by George Bush in my name. At some point, one must sit down and have an honest contemplation with what it means to be an American citizen in an America that is ruled by George Bush. It is not enough for me to sit here at night talking about his crimes against humanity. It is not enough. It is not enough for us to talk amongst ourselves and say, oh, well, you know, he's a terrible president. Bless his heart, Bart Kopp's worst president ever posters are just popping up all over creation. And I'm glad for the people that have the guts to carry those and to show those to the world. That is not enough. It is not enough. Because if you adhere to any sort of morality, and I'm not pinning this to any particular faith, Buddhist, Hindu, Jewish, Christian of virtually any stripe except religion industry, because they have no morality. If you are an atheist and have a well-defined humanistic sense of morality, or an agnostic or a deist, at some point that you are going to realize that that morality is in direct conflict with what is being done by the leadership of this nation in relation to the rest of the world and being done on your behalf and with your tacit silent acceptance. It is as simple as all that. Until George Bush is hopefully, peacefully, lawfully removed from the White House, we are every last one of us responsible for what is done in the world in our name. There is no getting around it. I have sat and I have chewed on it and I've written about it and I can't get around it. I talk about the war crimes that George Bush has committed in Iraq. And he committed them because I, as an American, were willing to tolerate him doing it. Were. Yes, absolutely. So I don't know where that puts us. I don't know what it does. The news that came out today that this man was the leaker of Valerie Plame's identity, and he was. We knew it all along. This is a bad detective novel where you can figure out this where you can figure out the whodunit on page two. The fact that he has done this and that there is not a growing, gathering, boiling mass of peaceful, quiet people sitting in Lafayette Park across from the White House demanding that he exit our building now amazes me. But it doesn't, again, because, like I said, we're not supposed to do that. The game is designed not only so that we shouldn't, but that we cannot. Because you'll lose your job if you head to Washington, D.C. tomorrow. Your children will go hungry if you head to Washington, D.C. tomorrow. They might repossess your house if you go to Washington, D.C. tomorrow. You've got a doctor's appointment tomorrow, so you can't go to Washington, D.C. That's how it goes. We are not at that point in this country where we ache so badly from the hurt that we can't, you know, that we can't just say, please, okay, just get me through the next 2 years, get this evil bastard out of the White House and it'll be okay, and then I'll work. We're not to the point where we realize that ain't gonna happen. Let's go to the phones. David is with us, or Chris is with us. Chris. Hey, Chris, you're head on. Chris. Honey, the red button. Yes.
Hey, Bob.
Hey, how's it going?
This is Mr. Savage.
Mr. Savage, how are you this evening?
Yeah, Bob, you're talking about the sphincter factor here, I believe. You mentioned excrement a while ago, so we're talking about the sphincter factor here.
Yeah, all right.
Hey, now, when Bush upsets you so bad, you can pick up the dime and change the date. Okay, it's pretty bad.
God.
Yeah. We've got, you know, unless you're a Homeland Security press secretary and you get arrested, maybe his only mistake was not belonging to NAMBLA, which Michael Savage does. If you can call it an organization, you might can get a tax write-off. I'm not sure. But Polk County, Maryland, Homeland Security press secretary, soliciting a 14-year-old girl over the phone.
In Florida.
Computer, yeah. Gave her the numbers for the cell phone, Homeland Security cell phone.
Mm-hmm. His office number? Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. But
and would you please go get a webcam so I can see you naked?
But the story, I just looked in the last few minutes. I just got back home. Deputies tasered 92-year-old man.
Oh, God.
For attacking an 81-year-old man.
What, at the nursing home?
Yeah, and they both have Alzheimer's. And the 81-year-old man is named Casanova.
Oh, brother. Oh, brother.
The 92-year-old man is named Holcomb. There, here's this, you know, in shape, has to be in shape, somewhat, police officer. The 92-year-old man balled up his fist at the police officer. So he panics and shoots him with a stun gun.
Coward nation. That's all it is. It's the coward nation, Chris.
I got to see a little bit earlier of the man who, I can't remember his name, that actually talked to Bush. That was so good.
Oh, that's an American hero there.
Oh, my goodness. And the wife was like, I have a question. She was like, it'll make my head explode.
Well, you know, he goes in the same pantheon with the guy who, right after Katrina, the emergency room physician down there on the Gulf Coast who said, go yourself, Genie.
Yeah, I wonder what would happen if everybody started throwing pretzel bags on the stage.
Oh, God. I don't think you're allowed to bring pretzels to those events.
Oh, probably not. Yeah, it's a distinct effect.
Hey, Chris, thanks so much, brother.
All right, man.
It's not often I get a call from Michael Savage. I love that. And David. Hey, David, you're head on. David.
Oh, hello, Bob. So, sorry for calling in a second time, but let me get this straight. Some national pundit called down a high school for a multifaceted, multi-point of view, take it from all angles debate.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. That's not allowed in Bush America.
Short version. 1959, a scant 3 years after federal authorized troops helped integrate a high school 30 years from where I was in high school. I was in high school in Knoxville, Tennessee. Lake City, Tennessee, Clinton, Tennessee was integrated in 56, I think it was.
Mm-hmm.
In 1959, my gray-headed, three kids, one of them in my high school, teacher, homeroom civics teacher in 1959, had 3 days of debate. Should there be segregation? That's the way you said it then. The first day, a debate team was picked. There was a pro and a con. The next day, they flipped. They had to argue the other side. The third day, four kids on each side that hadn't said a word were mandated to stand up and speak about it. That was 1959. Could there have been a hotter issue in Tennessee in 1959 than segregation?
I'm guessing no.
Probably not. I don't think so. And we in a publicly funded high school, were told, asked, graded on, asked to participate in a debate that had a side to it that most of the Southern citizens wanted swept under the rug, and it was considered part of a legitimate education in a publicly funded, absolutely pedestrian, mainstream, plain vanilla, stinking high school. But yeah. Now then, some geek, some talking head with a piece in his ear says we can't have high school students discuss the validity of a killer.
Oh, yeah. Well, and don't forget, I mean, this is, you know, this is your neck of the woods, too. And, you know, you're personally responsible for everything that happens in Tennessee, you and Luke.
I am directly.
Yeah. You know, the Chattanooga Times and Battle Cry of Freedom and Moral Volcano and Morning Glory of Thunder, you know, whatever. You know, they chimed in too. This says that we have more to worry about than terrorists. They equated terrorists and some high school senior in Parsippany, New Jersey.
I am so disgusted. I am so dismayed. I am so motivated I just may retire tomorrow and become the prototypical gray panther. And I got all my teeth.
Then you're dangerous.
Thank you. Listen up, Agent Fred. I'm coming for you. It's you and me, baby.
And you're bringing the special fudge and the peanut brittle.
You got it. Tampa Bay title chart. Now, roll the credits. Cue the angel. It's time. Bring on Charlton Heston. I'm ready. Hey, just give me a heart. Give me a heart. Put me in. I'm ready. I'm ready. Bert Lahr got nothing on me.
Hey, David, thanks so much, brother.
Thanks, Bob.
Have a good evening. That's where we find ourselves. We can't debate whether or not George Bush has committed a war crime. Whew. Welcome to America. You willing to do anything to change it? Are you? Or are you just not at the point where things like murder committed in your name matter that much? I'm not telling you what to do. Not at all. And, of course, one of the things that sort of set me off down this little path was our good friend Bruce Birch's report from Charlotte. That report will be up on the website. And by the website, I assume he means headonradionetwork.com. Yes. So run on by. Have a look. Have a listen.
And there's a picture of Harry Taylor there.
And there's a picture of this new the new hero, Harry Taylor, who dared ask George Bush if he was ever ashamed of himself. You'll be looking at the face of an American not afraid to be an American. Thanks for joining in with us and sharing that most precious thing that you have, your time this evening, or if you're listening to the replay, whenever it is. We certainly do appreciate it. The show, of course, tonight was produced by my lovely wife, Agnes. Brian Reznor announces. Randy Kerbway is our engineer. Ben Birch of WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the stream that you're listening to, and the archives, and the podcasting. You've I think you've put him over the top in his fundraising drive now. I'm proud of you. Because he's not going to send you a bill, he's just that nice a guy. And, of course, our good pal Joe Vecchio at cupofjoe.blogspot.com, his fundraiser continues. And he does need your help, because he's joining the family, and that takes some equipment. So help out if you're able. Many, many thanks to Shelby LaPrey at radiopower.org, who helps disseminate this program to a great number more people every day, Tuesday through Saturday. It is much appreciated. And we so sincerely appreciate the efforts and the support of the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights, thousands of West Virginians who are building the American dream. And by supporting the growth of this fledgling head-on radio network, saving the American dream for yet another generation. Our technical support for our computer systems are provided by Godbold Computer Services. We deeply appreciate that as well. And always, 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 RMR, it's all for you.